afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, February 21st, 2023. Hi, Dave.
Hello, Melody, and happy National Pancake Day.
Ooh, I like pancakes.
Well, better yet, it's also Fastnacht Day, as well as Sticky Bun Day, two biggies in our cultural history. Curiously, though, it's also National Grain-Free Day. So a little bit of mixed signals, which we're actually used to reporting on this program. hey, for the unknowing out there, eating Fastnacht is a pre-Lenten celebration that takes place the day before Ash Wednesday, which is today. One of the traditional items to come out of the celebration was this pastry made from potatoes and yeast. Delicious. I guess they technically call it a donut. Came from, to the U.S. by way of the Pennsylvania Dutch. It's one of their traditional foods, I guess.
So the donut was introduced by the Pennsylvania Dutch?
It's a German derivation, and so when they came over here, they brought the Fastnacht with them. I don't know if they cut them into triangles or squares in Germany, but I've seen them a lot as triangles over here. So I settled on pancakes. I didn't have access to Fastnacht, so pancakes with scrambled eggs today.
I love donuts, but.
Yes.
Anyway, it was an interesting day in the markets today. We're, of course, every day is an interesting day in the markets. A little bit of strength in the dollar put a little pressure on gold today. So gold's down $6 at $18.36. Silver, though, was up by 5 pennies at $21.93. Platinum was up $18 at $954, with palladium up $12, $1,611. The USDX 104.18. Crude oil was down 30 cents at 76.05. Paper markets today. The Dow dropped almost 700 points today. 33,129. That was a little over 2%. The S&P was down 2%, 3,997. And the NASDAQ was down 2.5%. 11,492. European markets were all negative, although not quite as bad. Well, most of them weren't even down 0.5%, but they were still all negative in Europe. Asia markets, Shanghai was stronger. All the two others that we followed, the Nikkei and the Hang Seng, were just down slightly. 10-year yield, that really popped, 3.958 on the U.S. 10-year yield. And natural gas today, that was lower by almost 9%, 2.073. We talked last week a little bit about the negative impact. Everybody might be cheering that this natural gas has fallen out of bed, but it does have a lot of negative impacts on employment, investments, and everything else. So that's an interesting one there to follow, to see, things okay for things to go down, but sometimes something like that, it gets that has more of a negative than a positive impact. So kind of interesting out there today. 700 points on the Dow. To the downside, and of course, 2% across the board in the paper market. So we'll see what tomorrow brings. I guess there's supposed to be a lot of investment or a lot of economic news coming out here shortly. And I'm not sure if what's happened in the last couple of days has or yesterday and today has the impact, and no one just really wants to talk about it or anything like that, because I certainly do believe that tensions in Ukraine and China and Russia and the U.S. are certainly beginning to maybe get to a point where we probably shouldn't be. But, you know, we had Putin suspend his nuclear arms treaty with the U.S. Putin did a State of the Nation address, I guess it was early this morning, our days, today. He also said that Russia would stand ready to resume nuclear weapons tests if the U.S. does so, a move that would end a global ban on nuclear weapons tests in place since Cold War times. You know, you could look at that as, you know, maybe that was just a hollow threat. But then again, you know, they're saying that there's no chance the U.S. would go down that road first. I wouldn't bet on it. Wouldn't bet on it at all. The U.S. wouldn't test. I don't know. Explaining his decision to suspend Russia's obligations under the New START, Putin accused the U.S. and its allies of NATO allies of opening, declaring the goal of Russia's defeat in Ukraine. They want to inflict a strategic defeat on us and try to get our nuclear facilities at the same time, declaring his decision to suspend Russia's participation in the treaty. You know, goes on and goes on and goes on. And, you know, again, I'm not a fan of Putin going in there and doing what he's doing. On the other hand, you know what? Is he doing what? You know, he's doing what he's supposed to be doing, isn't he, Dave?
Well, in whose eyes? In his own. Well, I mean, Putin's a legend in his own mind. You know, is he supposed to be doing this?
Like I said, I don't agree with him going in there and taking these to all these next levels, but, you know, all the sanctions that we placed didn't work. Everything that we've done, we didn't work. You know,
I disagree. It's made life to the tune of over
$100 billion. That's what's helped. We think we have no accountability for all the money that we've given them. None.
No, but the sanctions have definitely made it difficult on Putin. I mean, compared to how it was or how it would have been had there been no sanctions. I mean, I think, among other things, sanctions has developed some opposition, you know, as it is among some of his closer friends, the oligarchs. But, you know,
hasn't related to anything for him to pull out of, hasn't made any major impacts.
Oh, no, absolutely not. I mean,
so what's the point?
Well, the point is that we couldn't do nothing. Nothing in this case, some reaction was, I believe, much more called for than just sitting back and letting him have his way.
That was for Ukraine to fight back. But you know what? The thing that I don't get is everybody knew that he was doing this. You had Zelensky kind of laughing it off in the beginning, saying that that wasn't going to happen. So he took he did no recourse as far as planning, you know, as far as that's what was being reported and everything. So I think we should believe, if we were to believe today's reporting, we should believe that reporting. So, I mean, there's so many things. And, you know, they saw him ramping up prior to, and there's never any discussions on talks. You don't hear anybody talk about, you know, maybe we ought to sit down at a table and, you know, discuss things. So to me, it's like there's no, it's just being pushed. And, you know, both, you know, there's no, you know, so it's going to go to a level that I don't think anybody really, except some might, but I don't want to see happen.
Where we do agree is that the military-industrial complex is alive and well in Eastern Europe, let's hope that, you know, we're not going down a worst case road. Just seems that would be insane. suicidal, even. But you know, even this suspending the nuclear arms treaty. I mean, whether or not that has a punch is going to depend, I think. You know, over the long run, is Putin going to ramp up production of, or to what extent is he going to ramp up production now of missiles and warheads that would have otherwise been in violation of this treaty, which really limits some of the numbers, particularly compared to how they were back, you know, in the late as the 1990s. I mean, the New START treaty limits both of our countries to no more than 1,550 deployed nuclear warheads, with 700 deployed missiles and bombers. I mean, that's enough to probably blow up the world several times over. You know, and the fact that Putin's already looking at not just Putin, but he seemed to have started the, you know, the supersonic missile technology. It's a scary thing out there.
Yeah, it is. And I think, but again, it's just like, it's, you know, I mean, we can see the writing on the wall, but I don't know. But anyway, we've got the housing slump. The nation's housing slump deepened in January as we saw home sales fall for the 12th consecutive month to the slowest pace in more than a dozen years. Now, this is all from the National Association of Realtors. Existing home sales fell to a seasonally adjusted annual rate of 4 million properties last month. Now, this is the slowest annual pace since October of 2010, when the housing market was, of course, still, you know, still reeling from the Great Recession, the 2008 foreclosure crisis. January sales cratered by nearly 37% from a year earlier and slipped 0.7% from December. Home sales are bottoming out, they say. That still remains to be seen, Dave, huh?
Yeah, it sure does. I mean, the median home price edged up 1.3% from January last year to $359,000. It's the slowest annual increase in home prices since 2012. That median home price is down around 13% since it peaked in June last year. Yun said that half the country is seeing some price declines, while the other half is seeing some price increases. Now, existing home sales sank, 18% in 2022. Of course, had a lot to do with mortgage rates having more than doubled. The average weekly rate in a 30-year mortgage has been hovering around above 6% since November, but jumped last week to 6.32, its highest level in 5 weeks. That's according to Freddie Mac. A year ago, it was a more modest 3.92.
Well, you know, I guess the economy is still showing some growth. The PMI, it showed a growth in February after 7 months of contracting, even as interest rates hit, you know, activity. Some say it's a sign of resilience, even as higher interest rates hit activity, according to data from a purchasing manager survey that was released just today. The S&P Global Flash Composite Output Index. Is that briefed at all? That's a long one, Dave. But it gauges activity in the manufacturing and services sector. That increased to 50.2 in February from 46.8 in January. Now, this is the second monthly improvement in the index. And we all know that usually if it exceeds the 50 mark, it signals expansions And this is the first time since June. The S&P Global Chief Business Economist Chris Williamson said that despite headwinds from higher interest rates and the cost of living squeeze, the business mood has brightened amid signs that inflation has peaked and recession risks have faded. And again, it's like, Dave, what really has changed?
I know.
You know, I know. What really has changed? You know, it's funny.
More of the same. We're reading all this stuff up, down, all around, month after week after month. I mean, the report shows output at factories fell for the fourth straight month, orders declining sharply. Guy said, although the manufacturing survey data are showing signs of improvement, the factory sector remains in contraction and focused on inventory reduction. That's, never an ideal sign, Melody.
No, it isn't. No, it isn't. Well, you know, old Larry Summers, he's still hanging around. His name always pops up every now and then. He's a former Treasury Secretary. He doubled down on his warning that the economy is headed for a collision as the Federal Reserve's efforts to cool inflation aren't working as well as hoped. Harvard University economics professor was asked by Bloomberg News whether the Fed needs to rethink its approach in taming the U.S. inflation. His response, the Fed's been trying to put the brakes on, and it doesn't look like the brakes are getting much traction. And over the past year, the Fed has increased interest rates at the fastest pace in history just to try to bring down inflation to 2%. We know that it hiked 25 basis points just earlier this month and taking the it's been one of those days, Dave. Anyway, though inflation has moderated from 40-year high of 9.1% in June, it was still far above the Fed's target at 6.4 in January. Summer says when your brakes don't get much traction, two things are going to happen. You can be moving too fast. That's the inflation pressure. And you can be setting yourself up for some kind of collision or crash down the road. And both of those things, I think, are real risks in this environment. So, but we had a hotter than expected retail sales report. Strong labor market data recently did spark concern that these interest rates are going to have to, the Fed is going to have to keep raising these rates a little bit longer than previously expected. But we all knew they were going to take it into 2025 if they, you know, but who knows what's going to be happening by then, Dave.
Yeah, indeed. The only thing I'd add is, Summer's saying the Fed needs to tread cautiously, with the risk being we're going to hit the brakes too hard. Then he says, quote, when we hit the brakes very, very hard, that's going to kick in at the same time that some of those negative cyclical dynamics about risking savings and excess inventory and so forth are kicking in.
Hey, I hear the music and we're kicking into a break. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSCTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. I did a comparison today of, you know, two of the major, you know, names that I hear constantly is J.M. Bullion and S.D. Bullion. I mean, I don't even know who people buy from these guys anymore because they're so expensive. So I quoted some Silver Eagle prices today. JM Bullion, I just did the 19 and 20 prices. JM Bullion was $34.82. SD Bullion was $32.02. Discount Gold and Silver was $31.40. APMEX was $36. Can you believe those prices? $36, $34, and $32. I don't hear too many people buying from APMEX anymore. I'm sure they do, but I don't want to get in trouble. But you can go to their websites and you can pull up the comparisons. And I quoted, actually, I quoted the for 20 just with the no discounts. Usually we give people discounts too, even at 20 coins. But this one was a, so 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. $31.40 is a pretty good price. So give us a call. You know, heading into break, we were going to come up and talk a little bit about restaurants. And this is a new trend. And I don't, people are willing to pay a monthly subscription. I mean, you know, we do it for streaming services, you know, all kinds of things. But now you have restaurants, Dave, that are doing subscription fees for their foods. You have some chains like Panera and P.F. Chang's. You might have some neighborhood hangouts. They're increasingly experimenting with a subscription model as a way to ensure steady revenue and customer visits. Some offer unlimited drinks or free delivery for a monthly fee. Others will bring out your favorite appetizer each time you visit. They're following a trend. The average American juggled 6.7 subscriptions in 2022, up from 4.2 in 2019. Probably had a lot to do with being locked up in our houses for 2 years. Matt Baker, the chef at Gravitas, a Michelin star restaurant in Washington, said this is just another way for customers to provide a level of support and joy and love for our offerings. It's like, are you kidding me? It's like, yeah, $130 per month, this Gravitas Supper Club, subscribers get a three-course takeout meal for two. If I was going to pay $130 for a three-course takeout meal for two, I'd want to go to the restaurant and get the rest of the service that goes with it. But hey, that's just me, Dave.
Well, Baker did say that gravitas shifted to takeout during the pandemic, like many restaurants did, but saw demand fizzle once its dining room reopened. The Supper Club, which serves about 60 diners per month, keeps that revenue flowing. The upscale Chinese chain P.F. Chang's also saw an opportunity to increase to-go orders with its own subscription plan, which launched last September. For just $6.99 a month, members get free delivery, among other perks. No free lunch or dinner, mind you. Now, apparently other restaurants are experimenting with these memberships, which let diners prepay toward their visits. You got the members at El Lopo, a San Francisco bar. You can pay $89 a month for $100 in dining credits, or $175 a month for $200 in credits. So when members come in there, El Lopo starts bringing out their favorite dishes. Each visit, they can gift a free drink to anyone at the bar. Of course, the industry believes that many more restaurants will begin to offer these subscriptions in the coming years, Melody.
You know, I don't think there's any restaurant that I like well enough that I'd be willing to pay a subscription just for me to go there. You know, I just, maybe in a larger city, I guess maybe that's where probably most of them are probably.
No, I suspect. Yeah, I suspect so too.
Yeah, because I would think sometimes it's just hard to get in. So do you get, you know, if you're making reservations, do you get first choice, you know? And does somebody get bumped so you can get in there if you have a member? You know, I don't know, but interesting. That is interesting how it's nice to see the restaurants become creative. But again, look at the problem that being shut down in 2020 and part of 2021 created for these restaurants. And so it tells me that you wouldn't think that they'd be back to normal or prior to, if they're needing to create these types of incentives for people to come in. So I don't know, just my thought. But so here we go to inflation. We're going to talk a little bit what inflation is. The Federal Reserve's 2% inflation target is key to its vision for stable prices in the economy. That's what they continue to tell us. Canada, Australia, Japan, Israel are among the many other economies that include 2% in their inflation rate targets. The 2% inflation target is a relatively arbitrary. So where did this 2% inflation rate originate from? John Hopkins University economics professor Lawrence Ball surmises, you would think that maybe somewhere, he says 2% was created. He says, oddly, it was invented in New Zealand. Arthur Grimes, professor of well-being and public policy at Victoria University, New Zealand, told CNBC, we led the way in inflation targeting. And that in the late 1980s, New Zealand was facing incredibly high inflation when freshly minted PhD economist Grimes started his work at the country's central bank, which at the time was part of the government. We were saying, okay, if we have independence, what should we target? Interest rates or the money supply? And one day, he just said, well, actually, what are we trying to achieve? We're trying to achieve price stability. Why don't we just have an inflation target? The Reserve Bank of New Zealand Act of 1989 introduced inflation targeting, and that policy is being used today in economies around the world. Canada announced its inflation target in 1991. The UK followed in 92. Sweden and Finland declared inflation targets in 93. And this was all according to the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, Dave.
Well, perhaps to its credit, or credit could be due, it wasn't until 2012 that the Fed declared its own 2% inflation rate target. And of course, since then, including today, there's been controversy over whether that target is justified. For example, in 2017, some economists wrote a letter to the FOMC, the Federal Open Market Committee, the policymaking branch of the Fed, making the case for a higher target. Ball, who was one of the economists who signed that letter, said there's no evidence that 3% or 4% inflation does substantial damage relative to 2% inflation, despite the fact that 4% is higher twice the 2% number. Be that as it may, now that though that as the world shifts to a new normal of sorts, inflation targets of the Fed and other central banks have faced new scrutiny. Former KC Fed President Thomas Hoenig said, "I think it's an error to say 2% is somehow magically the right number." Others wonder if there should be a specific numerical target at all, or even if the Fed should continue to exist.
There you go. That's the problem.
Now, assuming the lack of political consensus to eliminate the Fed, perhaps the Fed instead should just simply reset, or Congress should reset the Fed and start with the premise that there always has been and always will be inflation with a fiat dollar. Now, given the Fed's sketchy history of under and overshooting its monetary goals, maybe its mandate should be a lot broader. I don't know what it is. Frankly, it's above my pay grade. I see some suggestions about, you know, having it pegged to a broader mission, like improving, continually improving the quality of life for all Americans, regardless of income level and other demographics. But because we like to quantify the success or failures of our missions, specific goals like maximum employment, stable prices, also things like income equality and other metrics could be set within a range of numerical targets, the specifics of which could be set by a group other than the Fed or the Congress. Just a thought.
You know, it's kind of, you know, because you're right about the inflation, you know, with a fiat dollar. And so if you didn't have a fiat dollar, you wouldn't have price instability. You wouldn't have to worry about price stability and try to manipulate markets in order to create price stability. So therefore, in the 2%, I mean, it's so ridiculous because their equations change to adapt that number because they can't keep that number because of the fiat currency that we have and the inflation that it has brought. And it's just like everything else. It's just so made up along the way. And they just adapt and change as they go. Oh, let's take out the energy and you know, blah, 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 and we'll get these numbers and change that number. And you know, we know inflation is more than 2%. It's been more than 2% for a really long time. It's kind of like shrinkflation. Heck, we were talking about shrinkflation 20 years ago or more when they've been doing it. But yet that only became a word here in the last year or two.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, they've been shrinking products for a long time, Dave.
Oh. Yeah, my Hershey bar is chief among them. On occasion, a friend who's more in tune than most of my friends anyway, most Americans, I would guess, in terms of you know monetary finance, ask, is it okay if we return to a dollar that's set to the price of gold? Or is it the dollar that's the problem per se? That is, do we need to get rid of the fiat dollar and, you know, have a gold standard again per se, even though we know that that's not in the cards? How do you react to that, Melody?
I don't know what else gives. Number one, we're supposed to have a gold-backed currency, money system.
Mm-hmm.
But to go back 100%, I don't know if it fits in today's world because mm-hmm. of the technology.
Mm-hmm.
But it does need to be backed by some gold, somehow, some way, because that's what's going to create the stability. And I think the dollar itself, I mean, it's just like anything else. It just destroys itself
mm-hmm.
because you don't have any restraints. You don't have any accountability. You know, there might have been some accountability when it was tied to when it was a petrodollar, but we don't have that anymore. That didn't make it right. You know, so again, once they took us off the gold standard, that's when all the issues happened. I mean, that's when we lost accountability to what we spend and the financing of all these wars and everything else that has continued since then. And we've gotten into, you know, $31 trillion in debt plus. The CBO says we're $200 trillion with everything combined. So mm-hmm. who knows where we're really at?
Mm-hmm.
So no, if we would have stayed, but it didn't work with their ability to. That was their, I don't know. I guess that was their way of trying to get everybody out of the depression to some degree, but it didn't work. It made it worse. So what is the answer? Well, I think we should go back to a constitutional monetary policy that was designed for this nation. But on the other hand, how does it fit in today's world? I don't know.
Yeah.
I think globally, eventually, there will be a basket of currencies. And I do believe there will be some part of it in there with gold, because that's the only thing that will bring the stability and prevent nations from manipulating their currencies. And look what we've done to our dollar. Look how we've blown that up. It went to 114. And it killed all the other nations around the world. They got hammered.
And for so long, the elites have told us that we need something like the Fed to control monetary policy, an independent body aside from, you know, an elected Congress, because the lion's share of Americans don't know any better, what option do we have but to play along? This is so much bigger than all of us put together. But I suspect that if there was, I don't know how this would ever happen in today's world, but certainly the more people learn that how stable money was prior to 71, I wonder if, you know, little by little minds would finally start to change. But again, with our country so big
and so divided.
Yeah.
But you know what the thing of it is, you know, it was one thing, and again, I'm not supporting the central bank. I'm not supporting the Federal Reserve. But you have the two big to fail banks that moved in and got bigger and bigger and bigger. You had Wall Street, these hedge funds, they got bigger and bigger and bigger. And, you know, so it got to the point where, you know, and they wouldn't have been that big. They wouldn't have been able to get that big if we had real money in this system. But we have a real break coming, and we'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
I gotta know if your sweet love is gonna save me. We may lose and we may win, but we will never be here again. So open up, I'm climbing in. So take it easy.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hey, one more time today. Welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Melody taking care of other client business. This final segment, you know where to reach her, 1-800-375-4188. Here's another interesting story. It's an eye-opener more than anything. According to MetLife Investment Management Company, institutional investors, i.e. Wall Street, could control 40% of single-family rental homes in the U.S. by the end of this decade. And a group of Washington lawmakers, not surprisingly, believe that Wall Street needs to back off. Ro Khanna, who's a Democrat representing California's 17th congressional district, says, "What we're saying is don't have private equity buying up single-family homes." Khanna is the lead author of the Stop Wall Street Landlords Act of 2022. In a recent interview, he said, "What's outrageous is your tax dollars are helping Wall Street buy up single-family homes." Now, the single-family rental industry got its start with government backing in the fallout after the Great Recession 15 years ago. Stephen Zhao, who's an assistant professor of finance and econ at the University of Texas, says it was that rare opportunity that attracted the institutions to build a portfolio out of these foreclosed properties. And since the early 2010s, there are places like Tricon, Progress Residential, American Homes for Rent, Invitation Homes, have each bought thousands of homes around the country. They've also added to the housing supply in some cases with built-for-rent communities that are popping up, I know, in southeastern Pennsylvania where I live. Some of these companies are financed by private equity firms like hedge fund Blackstone and investment managers like Pretium Partners. It's almost a captive market, says Jordan Nash, who's director of labor jobs and housing at the Private Equity Stakeholder Project. Says they've been very explicit about how people are shut out of the home buying market and are going to be perpetual renters. These calls come after fierce housing inflation hit many Sunbelt states, including Texas, Georgia, Florida. The prices in those markets have outpaced national figures for rent inflation that we've discussed on this program. For example, between 2020 and January 23, rents for a two-bedroom detached home increased about 44% in Tampa, Florida, 43% in Phoenix, and 35% near Atlanta. That's compared to just 24% cumulative increase nationwide. Industry advocates argue that they don't control enough market share to dictate prices in any market. Large institutions owned about 5% of the roughly 14 million single-family rentals nationally in early 2022. But again, according to MetLife, by 2030, the institutions may hold over 7.5 million homes, or more than 40% of all single-family rentals on the market. Now, in the short term, some companies may retreat from the real estate market as correction concerns continue to mount. Okay, this don't kill the messenger here, but a week ago, U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont formally reintroduced his Social Security Expansion Act in Congress. Under terms of this bill, anyone who's a current Social Security recipient or who would turn 62 this year would receive an extra $200 in each monthly check. And that's something that retired seniors would no doubt welcome as inflation wipes out their annual cost of living increases, even close to 9% this year. The latest draft of the bill also provides a way forward for the severely underfunded program, ensuring that future generations can receive benefits through 2096, at least according to Sanders' office, by taxing the highest earners in the country. Now, according to his office, this would be done all without raising taxes by one penny on over 93% of American households that make $250,000 or less. But that $250,000 threshold could be a problem for President Biden, who has drawn a red line on any tax increases at the 400,000 household level. Sanders said right now, a Wall Street CEO who makes $30 million a year pays the same amount into Social Security as someone who makes $160,000 a year, which is the cutoff. Speaker of the House Kevin McCarthy recently said that any cuts to Social Security and Medicare would be completely off the table in discussions about raising the debt ceiling. This makes this Social Security Expansion Act bill timely for a couple reasons. First, it follows a Social Security Administration announcement last year that Americans will stop receiving their full Social Security benefits in about 13 years without further congressional action to shore up the trust fund's funding. It also comes during a period of historically high inflation that's had a particularly big impact on seniors living on fixed incomes, many of whom rely solely on Social Security. Almost 40% of seniors rely on Social Security for a majority of their income. One in seven rely on it for more than 90% of their income, and nearly half of Americans age 55 and older have no other retirement savings at all. Whew. Crazy stuff. Ram says investors now expect the major central banks to raise rates much more than they were thinking just at the start of this month. They're still underpricing the risk of how much more tightening is to come. That is, investors. Ram believes the Fed may raise interest rates as high as 6%, in fact. The ECB to 4% and the Bank of England to possibly 5%, especially should the global economy continue to be resilient and inflation run high. Here's why. The telltale 3-month to 10-month, excuse me, to 10-year Treasury yield curve has been in a consistent inversion since last November, and frequently recessions have followed between 11 and 14 months later, with little exception. That would suggest that the economy is unlikely to roll over before October at the earliest, meaning the Fed and its peer central banks may be rising rates all through the summer as they try to get inflation closer to their targets. Now, while traders have repriced central bank trajectories considerably this month, they are still blasé. The markets currently see a terminal or end rate, peak rate, at just shy of 5.5% in the U.S., about 3.75% in the Eurozone, and 4.5% in the U.K. Those scenarios are consistent with analysis that showed the Fed has, on average, been able to stop tightening only when its inflation-adjusted policy rate, has reached a full 200 basis points or 2 percentage points. Well, the Fed's current real policy rate is 95 basis points, meaning it still has a ways to go. Recent data here have upended expectations of quick disinflation, with consumer prices actually accelerating from a month earlier in January, spurred by the jobless rate sliding to the lowest, at least the headline rate sliding to its lowest level since 1969, and retail sales rising the most in almost 2 years. Now, while the Fed has raised rates by a phenomenal 450 basis points this cycle so far, headline inflation, the government says, is still running at 6.4%. That's over three times its target. Recent comments by Euro region policymakers suggest that the European Central Bank may act forcefully. And we're beginning to see mentions of the Fed returning to 75 basis point increases next time around. Well, the ECB currently projects inflation to average 6.3% this year, meaning its real policy rate is deeply negative, underscoring why many of its officials reckon the benchmark isn't restrictive yet. Well, in the UK, recent comments suggest that policymakers are wary of taking interest rates too high, though Bank of England Governor Andrew Bailey's recent remarks suggest that the BOE, may make peace with a peak rate of 4.5%. Even so, with both headline and retail price inflation in the UK still running above up 10%, a quick decline to 2% highly unlikely. Now, at the start of the year, traders were working on the assumption that inflation is a last year problem. Now we know it ain't transitory. It's alive and kicking, while the economies are also more resilient than thought. Well, that could only mean one thing, probably a recalibration of the Fed's and other central banks' rate trajectories upward. Okay, our latest American Survival newsletter hit the streets yesterday. I have a follow-up article on subscribers' comments to last week's newsletter article and blog about how we elect presidents here in the U.S. I mentioned that newsletter subscriber Stan A. emailed me the following in response to my article that asked, could the National Popular Vote Compact cure what ails us? He said, quote, it seems that the real problem is winner take all and not the Electoral College. If the federal government mandated that winner take all can't be used with the Electoral College, but electors must be apportioned by the popular vote in each state, it seems that that would solve the problem. Now, another subscriber who requested anonymity wrote, quote, aside from basing electoral college votes on the popular vote in each state, a constitutional amendment to limit the presidency to citizens between the ages of 35 and 75 would be in the best interest of the country. And as I had mentioned, the qualifications clause in Article 2, Section 1 of the Constitution requires the president to be a natural-born citizen, at least 35 years old, and a resident of the U.S. for at least 14 years. I then asked, well, why not an amendment then that adds a mandatory 70, 75, or even 80-year-old age ceiling? That is, to serve as president, a citizen must be between the ages of 35 and, well, whatever, 75, 80, whatever you pick. if the president were to turn, say, 75 or whatever the ceiling is during his or her term of office, she'd be ineligible to serve further once that term ends. Like the age requirements to serve in the U.S. Senate and House, a minimum age requirement for the presidency ensures that a person holding that office will have the, quote, maturity necessary for the position. There would also be enough time to look at that person's previous roles in government or business for voters to be able to assess the merits of electing that person as a presidential candidate. Well, you know, whether the ceiling is 75, 80, whatever, reasonable people can conclude that at some advanced stage, a person's mental and intellectual capabilities begin to significantly slip. Not to say a 40 or 50-something president can't be off his or her rocker. Plenty of them have. Now, other things being equal, some appropriate ceiling age, I think, is a reasonable thing to require of our presidents. We do it for thousands of lower-level judges around the nation. Why not for our commander-in-chief? A rush of gold and silver blog reader, Christine Z, responded, nope, because it would rule out President Trump. Besides, we all know mental acuity and acumen has nothing to do with age. Many people who are 80 are sharper and more intelligent than young people in their 30s because we see it today. The most important trait to have is common sense, which is woefully lacking in most of the population these days. Well, thanks for your sensible comments, Christine. Other listeners, if you have an opinion you'd like to share, please send your comments to me at daveallen.usa@yahoo.com. I'll respond to you promptly and read them on a future Financial Survival Radio program. Hey, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back Thursday. Butch will join Melody tomorrow along with Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. Thanks always to our producer, Todd, and to you, our loyal listeners, for tuning in to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Have a good evening. Bye-bye. Have a plan. If I've got you